the lengths people go to be associated with you. So sad, man.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Just at the time of recording, we've got the last of the Las Vegas Summer League games going on, so we're going to look back at what happened through Vegas and Utah and Sacramento Summer Leagues as well from a scouting perspective. Yesterday, we looked at it from more of an analytical perspective with Jacob Goldstein. Today, we're going to be looking at it from a scouting perspective, and I'm going to be talking with an up-and-coming man in the NBA draft world, someone who you should all be following on Twitter and reading his stuff over at The Stepien, and that is, of course, Jackson Hoy. Jackson, welcome to the show for the first time. I'm sure it won't be the last.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Josh. Kind of glad Summer League's over these last few days. It's just kind of been, this is really still going on. Like, it feels like it's been forever. And so finally wrapping it up, can get our takeaways and then be done with this whole draft process for a little bit.
All of these, all of these teams start, you know, sitting there, more important guys, except the Lakers, of course, which have to make sure they push to get Summer League MVP every season with Josh Hart named MVP. Today, there was no need for him to play past the first two games, but he played every single game, which was nonsense, but he was clearly dominant, and we saw that through Summer League. But Jackson, you do work at The Stepien. I linked your stuff out quite a bit during the season with an excellent, I can't remember the title you gave to it, but it was your top 100 board with player capsules, which was extremely helpful, and everyone should be checking that out. Hey, how long have you been writing on the NBA draft at The Stepien?
So I started at The Stepien back in January. I've been doing NBA draft coverage probably since April of 2017. I got into that 2017 cycle kind of late. I didn't really know what I was doing. That was more just time to learn, really, for me. And then once it turned over to the 2018 draft, I kind of got into a little more, went through the whole cycle for the first time, and about halfway through the year, doing some writing with Lock Draft, who I still do some work for them. Stepien asked me to join, and ever since I went over there, I've just really gotten into diving a lot more, approach things from some really interesting angles, and take a look at some guys from a really deep look. That's what I really appreciate about the work we do there, is just getting to take a deep dive look at guys and figure out exactly what parts of their game translate to the NBA level, what matters, what doesn't. And early returns, at least from Summer League, I feel like myself and a lot of the other writers over at The Stepien, we've sort of been vindicated quite a bit by our opinions during Summer League. Trae Young certainly had his struggles early on, but he's stepped it up a little bit over the past few games, or the last few games that he played. But yeah, it's really fun just getting to dive in and look at all the players so deeply.
So make sure you are following Jackson and checking out The Stepien. But let's talk about a few players who you were impressed with at Summer League. They're through either Vegas, Sacramento, or Utah Summer Leagues. The first one of those guys, I think, is a fairly universal selection. I spoke about him a little bit with Jacob yesterday, and that is Wendell Carter Jr. of the Chicago Bulls. He averaged 17 and 8, almost 3 blocks, shot at a really high efficiency, was able to knock down threes. What were you impressed with the most with what Carter was able to do in Vegas for the Bulls?
Well, with Carter, it wasn't necessarily that he was doing things that I'd never seen him do. It was that he did things that I'd seen him flash once or twice, and they were now becoming consistent from him. So a lot of the face-up game on the perimeter, he didn't get a whole lot of opportunity to do that at Duke, but we really saw that a lot more from him in Vegas. That was super impressive. Even then, the Bulls didn't run a whole lot of stuff for him to pick and pop to the three-point line. He went to the mid-range a lot and was still able to make plays out of there, a lot of pump fakes and drives, that sort of thing. But I was really impressed with his offensive game. And then defensively, I wrote a piece, I think, the week of the draft, looking at his feet and how quick he could defend on the perimeter. And my takeaway was basically his issue is not his athleticism. It's that he has poor technique a lot of the time, and he's actually pretty quick and can defend the perimeter. And that's what everyone was so blown away by in Summer League, was, wow, this guy really can defend the perimeter. And even I, as someone who's high on him in that regard, I was a bit surprised with how quick he looked a lot of the time. In that Atlanta game, he contained Trae Young quite a few times off the dribble. He was really impressive in individual defense when switched on to point guards there. So that was super promising. The Bulls, of course, look like they're going to have some defensive issues that he's going to have to cover for, just like he did all of last year at Duke. But he really looked a lot better in terms of defending the perimeter. He looks to have ironed out some of the issues in his technique, because at Duke, what would happen a lot of the time is he'd be kind of flat-footed out on the perimeter. And learning to play on his toes a little bit more is a big step forward for him. That's something he needed to work on, and it looks as though he has. So that was really exciting to see. And then just the full package on offense. You know, there's not a whole lot he can't do. He can face up. He can pass. He was running a lot of DHO actions for the Bulls, where they'd use him as a passer, use him as a decoy sometimes. All that stuff was really great, scoring out of the post. So he just looks like a complete player. I don't know that there's a significant hole in his game right now.
Do you think that from what we've seen from him through his time in college and this limited sample here in Summer League, that he will be starting for the Bulls, maybe not opening night? Of course, there's still Robin Lopez there. There's Bobby Portis there as well. But do you think that Carter has shown enough that they should be putting him straight into that starting lineup, or at least within a month or two?
Yeah, I think I'd rather have him starting over Robin Lopez, just to give them a little bit more dynamism in the front court. I don't know what they're going to do with, like you mentioned, Larry Markin and Bobby Portis. They have a lot of pieces in that front court. They just signed Jabari Parker too, and I don't know where they plan on fitting him in. But I think Carter he's the best young player that they've got in terms of upside and floor at the same time. Like he's a guy who could be the best player on them if they become a really good playoff team down the line. Like there's just a ton of potential with him, and he's already bringing such a high floor. So I think they should be giving him reps early on. I mean, I can't see Lopez. Is he in the final year of his contract? Because if he is, I can't. Yeah, so he's probably just a rental beyond that. So maybe you try to trade him. I don't know, but I think Carter should be playing at center, playing most of the minutes for them.
Listeners to this show would have heard me talk about Carter quite a bit in terms of his fantasy value. I think he can be a top 100 guy for this season. I think he's got top 25 absolute peak in 4 or 5 years' time. So that's how you should be valuing him in terms of long-term value for fantasy leagues and dynasty-type formats. The next guy I want to talk about, Jackson, is from the New York Knicks, a guy that got a ton of buzz, and that is Kevin Knox, who averaged over 21 points a game in Vegas, 6.5 boards, a steal, was inefficient, 35% from the field, 81% from the line, a steal a game and 0.3 blocks. And the flashy numbers, the flashy dunks got a lot of people's attention here from Knox. I didn't really love the pick when he went to the Knicks at pick 9, a lot of people are getting, I think, a little bit carried away with what Knox was able to do. But as I've said on this podcast plenty of times, and I feel confident that you'll agree with, the players coming out of Kentucky, they do get limited by that Kentucky system, and they can show a little bit more when they get to a professional type environment, which is exactly what Knox did. So what were you impressed with Kevin Knox? Where should we be pumping the brakes on him? And what was your overall thought of that? How much of it was a surprise to you?
Well, last year at Kentucky, 62 or 63% of Knox's offensive possessions came either on spot-ups or on off-screen possessions. So basically using him as like a shooting decoy a lot of the time. And that's just not really who he is as a player. I think he's a good shooter who has, foundational mechanics that I believe in, but he's never really been a guy who's a marksman, knockdown shooter by any means. I think he has the potential to get there, but that's not really who he is right now. But in summer league, we saw the Knicks putting the ball in his hands a lot more, and I was really impressed with his shake. He looked faster off the dribble. He looked like that dunking that we saw, obviously that athleticism at the rim, that's highlight flashy stuff. But it is important to note that he wasn't really doing that kind of stuff in the half court very often at Kentucky. So he definitely looks to have taken a step forward in terms of athleticism. Maybe it's just playing with a more spaced out floor. Obviously, Kentucky, one of the worst shooting teams in the country. Knox, really their best shooting threat throughout the season. So they didn't have a whole lot there for him to create. There wasn't a whole lot of room. So I think that was huge for him, just getting to play with more room. But he looked really impressive in terms of handling the ball. That's what I was impressed with. The big scoring, the high points per game, that's not really my takeaway. Obviously, you know the inefficiency and that sort of thing. But my takeaway is just that we saw him do things with the ball in his hands that I didn't see him doing at this point. And there are still issues he still has to clean up. He's not really that proficient of a finisher with his left hand. And a lot of the moves he was making weren't necessarily super advanced. I don't know how well that really translates to actual NBA games. And I still think he has some questions on defense just in terms of his on-ball quick twitch ability. I don't know exactly who he defends right away. Probably best at the four, but we'll find out. I'm a bigger fan of his, though, than I was coming out. And I had him 17th on my pre-draft board. I don't know exactly how much I would move him up, but I would definitely put him ahead of Josh Okogie, who I had at number 16, based on just what I saw some relief from him. I was really impressed enough to move him up at least there. And then I had Shea Gilgeous-Alexander 15, so I'd probably want to move up Shea too. So if we're getting into a whole re-rank, that would take me a long time to figure that out. But I definitely would move Kevin Knox up just a little bit, but I'm not ready to declare that he's a top five prospect in this class or anything. He still has a lot of issues to address, but the improved ability with his ball in his hands I really liked.
He still has his struggles with defensive or generating defensive stats. Steals and blocks weren't at a very high rate there at all. He was sporting a 33% usage rate in Vegas, which he's not going to be able to get anywhere close to approaching in the NBA. Look, a starting job is probably there for him in New York. We've heard Fizdale be really positive about what Knox can bring. But in terms of overall fantasy value, the inefficiency, the lack of steals and blocks, not a high assist guy, although that was more impressive in Summer League. It should give you some level of pause as to his overall upside and the defensive stuff. Yeah, can be a significant concern for what he's able to do as we look long term. But he was a guy that did impress me and surprise me. But I think some people are going maybe just a little bit overboard when talking about the performances of Kevin Knox, because they see 20 points per game and they go, oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, but it's not always just that. And as you said, that's not the big takeaway. Some of the other things were impressive, and he's still got quite a few things that he does need to look into in terms of cleaning them up to become a successful NBA player. His Kentucky teammate, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, you've talked about him already. He looked fantastic. Was he the best point guard you saw at Vegas?
I think so. He was brilliant that game. I think it was against the Rockets was the one where he was just unbelievable. That might be the best single game I saw from anyone at Summer League. Wendell Carter, I don't remember which one of his games it was, but he definitely was rivaling that.
But those two guys, maybe with Carter?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, both those guys just had incredible performances. I think those maybe were on the same night. But D'Anthony Melton also played great in that same game against the Clippers. So that was a really great duel between those two. But Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, just seeing the improved shot-making ability off the dribble. One thing I noted from him at Kentucky was that when he would pull up in the mid-range, it would take him so long to transition from dribbling into his shot. He would have to basically come to a complete stop. He wasn't able to stop on a dime and pull up. And that was completely different in Summer League. He was stopping on a dime, pulling up, getting into his jump shot. That was really impressive to see. He was getting to the rim at will. And one thing that Mike Rebnov, one of my colleagues at the Stepien, he's noted that coming out, Shea wasn't a very, super highly rated recruit. I think he was like somewhere between 30th and 40th in his class, because a lot of people would say, oh, he's a great high school player, but a lot of the stuff he does won't translate to the NCAA. And then a lot of the stuff he did, that shifty downhill driving, that did translate to the NCAA, and then people were kind of saying the same thing about him as an NBA draft prospect. And then early on, at least, it looks like that's translating his ability to get to the rim and sort of wiggle close to the basket. I mean, he was really impressive just in terms of consistently being able to beat guys, consistently getting into the lane, making smart reads as a passer, and heating up the ball on defense. He looks great. I still have some doubts about him against a lot of the NBA level guys, because he does have to work on that frame, and against some, you know, bigger power guards, they can really go through him. I don't know how switchable he is despite that length that he's got, but his effort on the ball, his quickness, that all looked really great. So he's just a guy who produces, and if the shot really, you know, comes around, he wasn't flashing insane three-point shooting ability at Summer League or anything, but he definitely looks to still be on that trajectory of working towards being at least a serviceable guy and not a non-shooting threat. And with the added threat of his mid-range pull-up, I really think he's got a chance to be super useful as an all-around offensive player. So I'm really excited about him. I definitely had him too low at having him at number 15, and I can't wait to see what he does this year with the Clippers. They got a crowded backcourt, so I don't know how much he's actually going to play, but he deserves minutes for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. They've got Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Avery Bradley, Milos Teodosic there, Sinderis Thormore, Jawan Evans, although he's probably ahead of both of those guys at this point. But there's still quite a few guys there. But it's an interesting case with Gilgeous-Alexander. We had the concerns about his shooting coming into the draft. He shot poorly in terms of percentages at Summer League, 25% from three, 64% from the line, as opposed to his college numbers of 40% and 82%. But it feels like the way that he was able to take his shots and make some of them, he made you feel a little bit better about his overall shooting capabilities, despite those percentages from the line and from three being worse than what we saw in college. It's a weird juxtaposition, I guess, but you feel a little bit more confident with his ability to make those shots, and he's getting to the rim. His defensive stuff was good. Creation. I really like Shea long term, and we saw all those flashes flashes in those games that he played in Vegas. De'Anthony Melton, you referenced him already. Is there any reason, Jackson, that we've heard or been speculated why he fell to pick number 46? Because it seems nonsense that he fell that far.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard anything about character or injury or anything. I think it was just that he doesn't really have the type of game that pops in a workout setting because he's not uber skilled. His best traits are his preternatural basketball instincts, which I think are as good as anyone in this year's draft and as good as anyone really as I've watched over the past few years. Obviously not scouting as close as I did this season, but definitely just not something typical you see. But in a one-on-one workout setting, you don't get a chance to show off those instincts. And he's a really good athlete for his size too. And that's something that can show up in a limited amounts in workouts, but he's not some nuclear Hamidou Diallo, Zaire Smith type of athlete by any means. And I think that just it ended up being a summer league that his skill ended up being a little bit further along than people thought. But I honestly just think that teams just weren't that enamored with his skill in comparison to some of the other guys that they watched. And that's what led to him falling because that's really the only explanation. There's been nothing out about him having character or medical concerns. So that's really it's puzzling that teams would overlook the massive impact that he's able to have on games, even when he's not scoring, just through the ability to defend multiple positions, make the right play on offense, all that sort of stuff. But I guess that's what it was, because I think that the workout circuit, a lot of teams fall in love with their guy that they saw, and no one really fell in love with Melton. Obviously, I think the Rockets are a smart organization. Maybe they were in love with him, but they didn't have to trade up to get him. So it was just really surprising to see him fall that far. I still can't believe that a guy with his ability went at 46 to a team that is one of the best in the league.
He attempted 7.6 threes per game as well. Only hit them at 32%, but it's a step up from what he did in his freshman year at USC, where he attempted 2 per game and hit them at 28%. So that's a huge, huge step forward. We know the Rockets love the 3 ball, and his ability to have the confidence in taking it and hit them at an elevated rate is obviously impressive. And I talk about on this show quite a bit, guys who have decent steal rates in college can often translate into, you know, solid NBA players. And we've seen that with Melton, and he looks really good. Now, in terms of getting enough playing time to be impactful this season, probably not going to be there with Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon in front of him. But the only other guys on that roster we're looking at those positions is someone like Gerald Green. So he's going to have a chance. Yes, there's Michael Carter-Williams there as well, but he should be able to leapfrog Carter-Williams very, very quickly. Maybe not this year, but by the end of the year, he should be moving into a more significant role. And Jackson, I want to talk about a couple of second-year guys. We expect the second-year players to really go out there and kill it. And these two guys, I feel that they did. Jonathan Isaac averaged 14-7, almost 3 blocks, over a steal. Showed a little bit more offensively as well. So it wasn't just the raw stats. His rookie season was really derailed by significant ankle injuries. And Isaac looked great. What popped for you for Isaac in this summer league setting?
Yeah, I loved him coming out. I had him number 2 in 2017 behind just Markelle Fultz. And, you know, I obviously wouldn't put him there in a re-rank, but I definitely think he was kind of a forgotten man when discussing last year's class just because he lost that year to injury. But this year at Summer League, I was so impressed with the way his off-dribble game has matured. He was hitting so many pull-up jumpers in the mid-range, which for a guy who's 6'11", 7 foot, you just don't see that hardly ever. And that's a really valuable shot to have in his arsenal. You kind of wish he'd, you know, just instead of dribbling two dribbles inside the line, he just takes some more threes to add to his efficiency. But I think that will come with time. And he just looks so fluid out there. He's definitely put on weight. Obviously, the defense is going to be great. He's mobile. He's got great instincts. He's long. He makes a huge impact on that end. That's been a consistent thing for him. And then just the blossoming offense is something I really didn't expect to see this early on, because at Florida State, the big issue for him was just that he didn't create for himself a whole lot. His dribble wasn't all that refined. But at Summer League, he definitely looks to have improved his handle and just a lot more fluid. Like, it's crazy. His size, fluidity, skill level combination is just not something you see. And then you add that in with his ability on the defensive end, and he has some definite star potential. A lot of people have been saying that he's finally going to be the guy for Orlando, the guy that they draft that ends up breaking out for them. And I think the next season is going to be huge for him. He's going to have a great opportunity. It's going to be kind of a weird fit next to Aaron Gordon and Mohamed Bamba, how they're going to juggle that rotation. But I think Steve Clifford's a really good coach, can work that out. And just the way that his offensive game has progressed in terms of going off the bounce, I think improving as a passer in terms of his vision and anticipation might be the next step for him. And obviously extending more, taking more threes, that's going to be big as well. But he definitely has massive potential with the coordination and dribbling ability he flashed.
Now, you talked about the improvement in his handle here. We've heard whispers or rumblings that they're going to be looking to play him at the three a little bit more this season alongside Gordon and either Vucevic or Bamba there at the center position. So do you think that the steps forward he took in ball handling and offensive creation is going to enable him to be a player who can play at the three? I don't think it's his best long-term position, but while they've got this front court crunch of guys there and having just re-signed Aaron Gordon, which I'm not sure I was a massive fan of, do you think that he can survive and flourish playing the three alongside those other guys?
I mean, I think he can make it work. I just think it diminishes his value, because if you have a guy like that who you can play near the rim on defense and make an impact in that way, and then also take slower guys off the dribble and, you know, face them up on offense, that's a huge value, because guarding him with a smaller guy, you know, he's going to be able to shoot over them, but he's not really a refined post scorer, so it's not like there's the threat of him taking a guy down low or anything. And defensively, I think he's best defending fours and fives. He can defend threes, but he's, I don't know, it's just not the best way to maximize him. It can work, but, and I think you do want to have your best players on the floor together. That is something that I think you should prioritize, and if you think he's definitively better than their other options at the three, you know, maybe Terrence Ross or something, then I think that you maybe should try to work that out. But long term, if you're trying to optimize him most, I would not want to play him next to Gordon and Bamba / Vucevic, whoever you have at the center. It's not the way to really make the most of his skill set.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see exactly how that pans out. I do think he's got top 50 type upside in a couple of seasons' time. And for if people listening to this show will know what I mean when I say he's got triple 1.5 potential, but a guy that can average 1.5 threes, steals, and blocks at some point in his career, I think that can come along. And that's extremely valuable from a real-life perspective and also from a fantasy perspective. Another young, big Jackson who looked too good to be there in Summer League was John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks. He averaged 19.8 with a steal and 0.8 blocks. He started taking threes, four attempts per game from three, 38% there. The free throw shooting was weird. He only hit 44% of them. I'm not overly concerned about that, but I think that he goes into this season almost written in pen as a starter for the Atlanta Hawks. We saw him be shunted in and out of lineups last season, but with a new coach there, Lloyd Pierce, I can see him getting big minutes. I think he's locked in for a top 50 fantasy year for this year. What did you like that Collins was able to show this summer league as opposed to what we saw from his pretty decent audition last year in the regular season?
Well, you brought up the jump shooting, and that was the number one thing. Just looking so much more fluid out there, taking shots, really comfortable. I don't think he attempted a three his entire time at Wake Forest. Maybe he attempted one or two, but that just wasn't part of his game. And for him to develop this so quickly is really promising, especially with how fluid it looks. But also, he was dribbling and passing a lot, and his playmaking on the move really impressed me. You know, if we're talking fantasy, I think he could average two or three assists a game next year pretty easy with the way that they were using him as a playmaker. Maybe running some creative stuff with him as a pick-and-roll ball handler even. Use a guy like Kevin Huerter as a screener. Just get creative with it. I think that, you know, Lloyd Pierce is going to have a lot of options at his disposal with all the perimeter talent that they're going to have there in Atlanta. And Collins is probably going to be the guy there next year. I mean, Trae Young probably going to take his lumps early on, have some big games, but young point guards like him probably don't really ever succeed early on. It's going to be a tough year for him. So Collins is going to be the guy who carries that team. They're not going to be very good, but he's going to get all the opportunities he wants. And, you know, getting to play out of pick and pops on a spaced floor, attack off the dribble, score out of the post, get those garbage buckets that he's so good at getting. That's all really promising. And then defensively, I think his feet looked great in terms of defending the perimeter, switching on to guards. That was really impressive. Obviously, this is a step down from real NBA athleticism, but that definitely popped for me in terms of what I've seen from him in the past. I wasn't used to him looking that quick defending the perimeter, so I was really excited by that. One question I have for you, I've heard some people discussing this. Would you rather have John Collins or Marvin Bagley right now?
Right now, for this coming season, I think Collins will be better.
Like long-term building. Sorry, that was a bad way to phrase it. Like, would you take John Collins or Marvin Bagley?
I'm not massively high on Bagley. I think I'd probably still take Bagley, but I'm not confident on it. What would you do?
Yeah, I'm kind of there too. I think that you have to respect that physical upside with Bagley, and that I think that he's going to be productive, but it was not a promising showing for him in Summer League. I think we can get to that in a bit, but I still think I would take him, but it wouldn't be surprising if a year from now that sounded stupid, and Collins was the obvious choice.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a massive year from Collins. I've talked about this on this podcast plenty of times, but I think he's going to get a huge opportunity. He's going to put, we know he's going to be an efficient guy. He's going to get tons of rebounds. If he can add just an element of rim protection and shot blocking and get to 1.5 of those per game, that's going to be huge. And he is going to be able to put up really, really big fantasy numbers. So keep an eye on him. I don't think he'll be a secret in terms of fantasy drafts moving forward, but in some situations he might be. So I really liked what he showed. He showed what he needed to do. He expanded his game. And on that point that you mentioned, he did take one three-pointer in college in his 2 years at Wake Forest, and in the four games this summer league he took 16. So yeah, that's a big change there from his type of game. The last guy I want to talk about in terms of players that you were impressed with was a guy that not many people really knew too much about, and that's Anthony Simons of the Portland Trailblazers. Of course, we didn't get to see him really play last year. He was at ING Academy, put up some okay numbers, or some pretty good numbers when they released those stats there. But it's hard to really judge that. But he came in and playing alongside Wade Baldwin in Portland. I thought he looked more advanced than I expected him to. He's still got quite a long way to go. But what was your takeaway with Simons? How much did you know about him before this? And did it reinforce what you knew, or were you surprised with what Simons was providing?
I was a bit lower on him just because I didn't trust the value of his archetype as this, you know, scoring minded two guard who wasn't really, I didn't think he was a great shooter based on my read on him. I thought he was good but not great in that regard, good but not great passer, that sort of thing, where he's like a, in that sort of Malik Monk mold. And that was a guy who really disappointed people last year, and I don't even know that he's as good of a shooter as Malik Monk is. So I had some pretty big concerns about him, especially I didn't think he was physically ready for the NBA either. But I didn't have a great read on him just because I didn't have access to film. You know, no one really saw a whole lot of him other than, you know, a guy like Mike Rebanov who watches all the AAU and everything. But I was definitely impressed by him in summer league, just looking physically ready and like he belonged skill-wise and IQ-wise. Probably most impressive for him was the defense. Just he looked locked in. He was long. He was able to pressure guys on the ball. His rep was kind of that he was a poor defender, but I thought that he did a good job of staying involved, staying engaged, and fighting on that end of the floor. So that was good to see. And then his shot was definitely more advanced than I'd given him credit for. He was hitting off the dribble. He looked like he had deep range, quick release. That's something that, you know, that the percentages don't translate that well from summer league. But the greater takeaway is that I think that his form and release looked more versatile and quicker than I thought that they would. And I think that he's just in a great spot to develop in Portland. Neil Olshey was on one of the broadcasts talking about how getting Anthony in around Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, those are two great guys for him to learn from. Especially a guy like McCollum, who is sort of the peak of his archetype as a shot-making guard who can play make a little bit. That's just going to be a really great developmental spot for him. He's a really young guy. You know, not as young as you'd expect, considering that he was technically in high school last year, even though he did a post-grad year. But he's definitely on the younger side in terms of guys in this draft. And his skill level popped. He's a nice athlete. I'm still a bit skeptical in the long term just because there's not a whole lot of really high level 6'4 shooting guards. You have to kind of hit the peak of your skill outcome to really reach a super, super high level at that archetype. But he could be a really nice sixth man, low-end starter type of player. And I think that that'd be a solid outcome for a guy you get with the 24th pick.
His numbers don't look great from Vegas. He only had 3 assists through the 5 games, 4 steals through those 5 games, 12 points and 3 rebounds. So look, that's not great from a fantasy perspective looking forward, but I think there is something that you can say that, yeah, he could work into a low end type starting guy, but really, I think he would struggle to ever crack like a top 80 or maybe even top 100, but he was way more impressive. I was, you know, skeptical. I had some positive thoughts about him, but he looked solid enough and looked more further advanced than what I expected him to be at this juncture in summer league. Of course, he's still playing today in the championship game. Actually, he might not, because he didn't play in the semifinal game.
Yeah, I think he's out for this game, for the championship.
Yeah, because he did sit the semifinal game as well. Now, you referenced it early in terms of disappointing guys. Marvin Bagley III only averaged 10-6. Did average 2 blocks, which was something that he struggled with in college. Shot 33% from the field, 67% from the free throw line. And then ended up with a hip injury that caused the summer league to end early. I was not a fan of the selection for him at number 2. What were you disappointed with Bagley's performance?
I mean, everyone was talking about how he couldn't use his right hand, and that was pretty stark just watching him force it to his left constantly. But It was a lot of the play style stuff where he was putting up so many long mid-range jumpers, especially off the dribble. And a lot of those off-dribble jumpers weren't even close. I think I went back through all his offensive possessions and shots, and there were at least four, maybe five air balls over the course of his four or five games. It was terrible. Like, I thought his shot had been progressing over the course of the year at Duke, and I was excited to see in this setting because I thought he really could have impressed me in terms of his ability to shoot from the perimeter. But I think he's a long way away there, just in terms of having so many bad misses, not really getting on target ever with that. And, you know, part of it is the fact that he was forcing up so many tough off-dribble looks. That's not even close to where he is. I mean, he should just be focusing on hitting threes from the corners before he's doing anything else. Obviously, in summer league, it's more of a chance to get guys to branch out. I don't think he's going to be tossing up a whole lot of off-dribble long twos during the regular season. But it was really not good to see him. He kind of lacked a degree of physicality around the bucket. He wasn't finishing consistently. He was really struggling to establish post position too. He was kind of getting pushed out. He was getting pushed off his spots pretty easily. There just wasn't a consistent go-to for him in the half court, other than, you know, the garbage buckets that he manages to get by being a high motor guy and a guy who can finish around the bucket with his athleticism and reach. He just didn't show a whole lot else. I mean, there were some grab and go flashes that were promising, but a lot of boneheaded turnovers. It was just a reminder of how far away he is, really, in terms of being able to contribute in half court. I mean, I was higher on him, but if Sacramento's planning on playing him as a, you know, 3-4 combo type of guy rather than at the five, where he's going to have to be creating a lot more of his offense himself, that's going to be really tough for him because he doesn't have the skill level yet to create from that spot. And at the center position, use him more as a dive man, a guy who can get a little bit more garbage buckets created by other guys. That can help him a little bit more early on, but that doesn't seem to be what the Kings want to do. So I think he's going to take his lumps early, and we'll see how he develops. But I am worried in terms of how he's going to get his buckets early on, because there doesn't seem to be a clear go-to skill for him on offense. And we already know about the defensive questions. You did mention his blocks going up, but I think that you have a guy that athletic with his size, just a product of having him be near the rim more, is going to increase his blocks. During the season, I think we'll see that go down if he's playing the three or the four. But you know, at Duke, he wasn't as close to the rim. And back in high school, I think his EYBL numbers, his blocks were a lot better. But I still think he has some issues in terms of reaction time, instincts, that sort of thing that he has yet to address.
He's not a guy that I particularly love from a fantasy point of view. Number two pick in the draft, I wouldn't look at him anywhere near that in terms of dynasty value or even for this season. A lot of people thinking he's going to be putting up these huge, you know, great stats on a bad team. You have to remember who the coach is, and that's Dave Yeager and his love affair with Costa Kufos and Zach Randolph, plus Scala Bissier, Willie Cauley-Stein. These guys are all there as well. Harry Giles, he's not going to be coming out and playing 30 minutes a night for the first month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe at all if these struggles continue. So not a guy that's going to be racking up assists, have high efficiency, getting steals, getting blocks. The free throw shooting wasn't great at summer league. I had my doubts with him heading into this, and nothing that I saw from Bagley through the time in summer league made me go, it made me think my doubts were wrong. It only reinforced them, and that's never a great thing. Of course, it is summer league. Plenty of things can change, but when your preconceived concerns get really backed up, that's when I have some worries about how these players are going to develop. And I think the Kings are going to look pretty stupid in the end by passing on someone like Luka Doncic at pick number two. Jackson, another guy in his second year who wasn't able to, I guess, perform as well as John Isaac or John Collins, and that's Jonah Bolden. Of course, he played in Europe last season. He'll be coming over this year to the Philadelphia 76ers, it appears, especially with Nemanja Bjelica reneging on his contract agreement and heading to Europe, so Bolden's going to have a position there. But he looked okay last year. He was blocking a ton of shots. He was really active defensively, grabbing rebounds, hitting threes, but he just couldn't really get anything going, averaging just 7 and 6. Still had the steals and blocks going 1.6 and 1.2, but the shot was way off, and he just didn't look the same as last year.
Yeah, with Bolden, the thing with him has always been is his three-point shot going in, because when it is, he looks really good, and when it's not, he really struggles to make an impact on offense. That's sort of what he depends on, and it's hard to bank on that. He's been super inconsistent throughout his career. Wasn't something he did much of at UCLA. Then he went and played with FMP last year and got really hot for a few months from three, and that's when the draft buzz really started building for him. And then I don't remember how well he shot last year with Maccabi. I think he was up and down over the course of the year, though.
31% from three.
Okay, yeah. So not as well as he had with FMP the season before, but he really needs to iron out that jump shot, because that's the key to him bringing value on offense as that stretch big. You know, he's pretty athletic and he can do some cool grab and go stuff, but functionally, the thing that matters most for him is his ability to hit shots. The switchable defense and the hands are still there, but I think he struggled to make an impact in the same way he did last season this year at Summer League. And I was disappointed by that, because he was a guy who I was really high on in 2017. I was really in on his skill set. I think I had him like top 10 that year. I was enamored with his two-way ability, but the big caveat was always, is he going to hit shots? And if he's not hitting shots, it's a struggle for him. And I think that's what we saw here at Summer League.
He's going to have an opportunity in Philadelphia again. Ersan Ilyasova's gone. Bjelica won't be joining the Sixers. They still have Dario Saric, of course, there, and Wilson Chandler moving into that backup four spot. But he's going to have an opportunity, but it wasn't great from Jonah Bolden. But his enticing combination of steals and blocks mean he does have some fantasy upside. Just whether he can actually get on the court enough to realize that potential is probably the big concern at this point. Another guy who we've got as a disappointing player here at Jackson is Jacob Evans of the Golden State Warriors. On a team that really didn't have much in terms of NBA caliber players outside of Jordan Bell, who again was too good to be there at Summer League, Jacob Evans didn't step up. Only 6 points and three rebounds, under an assist, under a steal, under a block. The shots didn't fall. What didn't you like about what we saw from Evans? What let you down with his performance through Vegas?
Yeah, you mentioned the lack of NBA caliber players on their roster, and I actually think Marcus Derrickson was a guy who looked a whole lot better than Jacob Evans did, which. Kind of an indictment of Evans, because I was really high on Evans coming out, or maybe not super high, but higher than I think maybe consensus was. I had him, I think, 21st on my final big board. The issue with him was that throughout workouts, it kind of looked like he was changing his jumper from what we saw at Cincinnati. He had a bit of a lower release point at Cincinnati, but it was at least more of a fluid shot. Now he looks like he tried to raise his release point, but it's got a weird hitch in it now, and that's really a concern for him, because the main way he was going to bring value on offense was through his jump shot. Not really an elite shooter by any means, but a good one who had range on that, could hit off the dribble a little bit, definitely hit off movement too. So that's really concerning to see him change it and then the results to kind of fall off. But there was also some on-ball creation potential with him, except he's not the best athlete. He's kind of limited in terms of his ability to beat guys off the dribble. And I think that against some better athletes, he was really struggling. That was always one of my big concerns with him. The game I kept coming back to was against Nevada in the NCAA tournament, when Nevada closed that giant gap over the last 10 minutes or so, and Cincinnati kept turning to Evans to try to create shots, and he just couldn't get all the way into the lane to finish there. He settled for a ton of pull-up twos because he couldn't get all the way to the rim. You put him in a situation where he's at even more of an athletic disadvantage. I think that really hurt him. My issue with him is just that he might be a guy who is a really good college player who just doesn't have quite the athleticism or size to translate to the NBA. You know, he's a generous, you know, 6'5.5" in shoes, not super quick, not super athletic, but he's really cerebral and had a solid enough skill level. But, you know, if you see that shot kind of fall off and the skill level's a bit worse than we expected, there's not a whole lot he can do on offense other than make the occasional smart pass. But if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, how much does that really matter? I still believe in him defensively, but as I mentioned, he's a bit undersized, doesn't have a great wingspan, and he's not really an elite lockdown defender. He's more of a team guy. So I think that he could be, you know, struggling early on. Obviously, it's too early to be completely all the way out on him because this is just Summer League, but it was definitely a highlight of a lot of the flaws and a lot of the reasons that he might have failed as a player, and a reminder that, you know, you have to evaluate how guys are going to translate to the NBA, specifically with regards to athleticism, with some of these guys who have tools that might be right on the margin of allowing them to be an NBA player or not.
He, and I know you're well aware of Jacob Goldstein's PIPM metric. We spoke to him yesterday on the podcast. His Summer League PIPM was -2, which is not really great at all. And he should be able to be doing much better than that in this type of, a setting. Yeah, for reference, Wendell Carter was at +1.1 overall. So it's a big, big difference. And a -2 means, that you're not looking at being an NBA caliber player, at least at this early stage. So he's clearly got a lot to work on there. A couple other guys we want to talk on here. These two, I don't know if saying it's controversial is the right way to say it, but in terms of disappointing players, DeAndre Ayton, we've got listed down here. I don't know if disappointing is necessarily the right thing, but Jackson, how would you categorize what Ayton was able to do? He averaged 14.5 and 10.5, a steal and a block, and was efficient, but it just didn't pop to me.
Yeah, it was very much bland. I think that might be a better word than disappointing. It was just there was nothing he did where it was something I didn't expect him to do, or something where it was like, oh wow, that's a number one pick play right there. It was a lot of finishing shots around the rim, a lot of, you know, solid job knocking down a mid range shot or whatever, but it was never him doing something like taking a guy off the dribble or making some amazing play defensively in terms of instincts. He had that chase down block against the Magic that everyone was talking about, but that's more of a DeAndre Ayton's an athletic freak type play than, oh, DeAndre Ayton's developing the IQ or the skill level type of thing. And we never saw any of that. And I think you can chalk some of that up to him being raw, but the thing that disappointed me most was just his play style. And I don't know how much this was his responsibility or it was just the Suns coaching staff telling him to go try some new things. That's always a tough thing to deduce from Summer League. But he was taking a lot of, you know, tough long twos, forcing up some bad mid-range shots. That was certainly questionable. And he also just had lacked a degree of physicality all around. And this is a guy who's, you know, 7 foot one, 250, 260 pounds, one of the best athletic specimens that we've got in the NBA the moment he steps on the court. And he just wasn't asserting himself, wasn't making that presence known. And it was disappointing to see that because so many times he was fading away on his shots. He was forcing up these long mid-range shots when all he really needs to do is bulldoze a guy and get into the rim. He just doesn't really have that in him yet, it doesn't seem like. So it was, you know, he was productive. He was able to make an impact on the game. He was, obviously like an all-summer league performer. And I think he was useful for the Suns. And I think he's going to be productive and useful from the start. But he just, you know, when you invest in a number one pick, when you have this guy who's basically universally compared to Hall of Fame players, right? You rarely hear a DeAndre Ayton comparison that's not a Hall of Fame player. When you have these insanely lofty expectations and you see a guy come out and he's a decent, you know, decent for a rookie, looks like one of the better centers in the class, but Wendell Carter was definitely more impressive to me. You can make a case that Jaren Jackson Jr. was more impressive, and there are other guys who had good games as well. There was nothing he did to look like the number one pick, to look like this future Hall of Famer. And I can't say I didn't expect that. I was a bit lower on him. I think I had him sixth on my final board. So I don't know. It's just, I think he's going to be a solid player, but I think this is indicative of the fact that he's not going to be this mega star, all-time Hall of Fame type player that he was kind of touted to be.
Yeah, I think that's how I would view it as well. Now, I've got an interesting dilemma coming up in a dynasty league that I'm in. I've got pick number three, and I know that Luka Doncic and Jaren Jackson are going to be going pick number one and two. So I'm going to have the option of Wendell Carter and DeAndre Ayton and Trae Young and Marvin Bagley there at pick three. And I'm seriously considering taking a guy like Carter over Ayton there. Now, people will go, oh, he's going to come out and he's going to average 20 and 10. People forget how hard that is. I don't think he's going to get that level of usage with Devin Booker. TJ Warren's a pretty high usage guy. Josh Jackson's around. I'm not sure he's going to be averaging 20 and 10, but it's the other stuff. Can he get steals and blocks? He had zero assists through the entirety of Summer League, which is a little bit concerning. Yeah, some of it we have to go, is it point guard play that was causing these problems at Summer League? But Shaq Harrison played pretty well. I thought Ali Okobo had his moments as well. They weren't completely horrible when you compare them to some of the other point guards through Summer League. They clearly weren't the worst combination there. I thought Harrison did quite a good job. So, yeah, again, when we talked about guys like Bagley, when you see Ayton put up numbers, which are okay, but they sort of are indicative of some of the concerns we had heading into the draft, and they manifest again. That's what gives you that level of concern of where he can grow from there. So I'm seriously considering not taking him at pick number three when I'm just looking at overall long-term star upside in that dynasty format. So yeah, Suns fans will be happy with Ayton. I put a poll out not long ago saying after Summer League, Suns fans, were you feeling better, worse, or the same about Ayton? And the majority of the poll, about 45%, I think, said better. About 20-something said worse, and 30-odd said the same, which I think is fair enough. But he definitely didn't blow us away. And do you think it's fair, Jackson, to say that he was probably the third best big through Summer League behind Jackson and Carter?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Jackson had his struggles, but he definitely did. He had higher flashes, more impressive moments than Ayton did. And Ayton definitely had his struggles as well. That game against Philadelphia, he was pretty atrocious. So I think that Jackson's definitely better, and I had him higher pre-draft. Jackson was my number one big going into the draft, and I don't think I would change that. But Wendell Carter was so incredible. I think that I heavily considered putting Carter at number three on my final big board. I ended up putting him fourth. I kind of wish I'd put him number three just with how good he looks already, but we'll see how Trae Young ends up looking. But yeah, those two guys definitely the top two bigs for me.
or now that you have preempted me by saying Trae Young's name, let's talk about him because he had some moments which were absolutely atrocious. Shot 30% from the field, but it wasn't, people are bust. And it wasn't like that at all. Yeah, he had some moments where the shots didn't go in. He still averaged 15 points and 6 assists. Hit 78% of his free throws, but of course, the shooting concerns were the real worry. When the guy comes in touted as next Steph Curry by people who are not as well-versed in looking at these draft prospects as what yourself is, Jackson, people are going to look, oh, he can't hit his shots, his shootouts, he's finished, he's over, terrible pick. And I didn't love the pick at pick number three there. At trading away pick number three to get him at pick number five. I didn't love that selection of Trae Young, but yeah, he was disappointing, but can you look at his performance or explain to us why his performance perhaps wasn't as bad as what the general consensus may have been and what areas he does need to work on?
Well, I think the biggest question for him was just the shot selection and moving around off the ball, because that's what people always talked about, was that, he's taking all these long 35-footers because he needs to, because he's being asked to do that by Oklahoma, and he's a great off-ball player, but he just doesn't get the chance. Well, there were other guys getting the ball in their hands, and he wasn't moving around off the ball. He wasn't, relocating to get open shots. And again, it's summer league. This is different from real play. He hasn't really been coached up on how to do that. I wouldn't think he's been a guy who's been playing point guard his whole life. He doesn't probably have a ton of experience moving around off the ball, but you definitely want to see him work on that. And then just continuing to chuck a lot of bad pull-up threes early in the clock, that he just needs to get rid of that until he has that ironed out a little bit more, because it's not going to be an efficient shot for him early on. If he's shooting 31-32% on those, it's just better to get into the offense. And when he would get into the offense and allow plays to develop and create as a playmaker, he was super impressive. His passing was on fire throughout summer league. He did a great job of creating for others, making things happen with the ball in his hands. That was always the underrated aspect of his game, was his ability to create for others as a playmaker. He's got pretty elite vision. He really anticipates things well. He's got great execution as well in terms of making one-handed passes to his left or to his right. But I think some of the decision-making with him, just in terms of the shots he takes and some of the decisions he makes on the court, that's where the real question lies. And he's going to have to figure that out. Also figure out how to create space and finish at the rim. But those are things that I think will come with time. We'll see how he develops those. But those are tricks that he's going to have to learn as he grows throughout the league. It took Steph Curry a while to figure out how to do those same things. So we'll see what he ends up looking like. But I think it might be a rough go early on, but I'm definitely not going to give him time just because of the ultimate value of his passing ability, the threat of his shot, and the high offensive potential he has. I was also impressed by his defense. I always thought that he was better than his rep was, just because he was so exhausted from the offense he had to carry at Oklahoma, that he did have pretty good instincts. His tools aren't horrible, and I think that at the point guard position, a lot of it does come down to how good are your tools. And he doesn't have good tools by any means, but he's 6'1", 6'2", with a 6'4", wingspan. That's not horrible. There are much worse tools out there. And he was making some plays on defense. He was kind of locked in, pressuring guys a little bit. Looked definitely better than he did at Oklahoma. So I was impressed by that. I don't think he's going to be the liability that some people made him out to be. So he's I'm probably not higher on him than I was, but I'm not significantly worried. He just needs to clean up those decision-making issues and start to figure out ways to create space and get a shot off at the rim more easily.
Now, I've been saying about Trae Young have the potential to have a pretty big fantasy year as a rookie, but he is going to have a significant detrimental effect on your field goal percentage. That's pretty clear from watching that's going to be the concern. But even as his defense is widely panned, he still is able to generate steals. He's still going to get assists. Now, Jeremy Lin is in Atlanta. I think Dennis Schroeder won't be there for the start of the year. Lin has his health concerns. Young might be able to be brought on slowly. But yeah, Young and Schroeder together as a backcourt pairing was never going to work. Young and Lin can play at the two. So I think that's fine to play those guys together. And that's going to give actually a little bit of a boost to Trae Young there. I still think he's got some upside. There is some significant bust potential there with him, but I think after this summer league showing, you'll find him slip down draft boards, fantasy draft boards, dynasty draft boards, and you might be able to get a little bit of value there, because the scoring, the free throw, and the free throw rate, I think, is going to be important for Trae Young as well. Getting to the line at a high percentage, steals, assists, they're all really valuable, and I think that you'll find he'll go maybe a little bit underdrafted now based on some of the struggles and the attention that was put on him in both Utah and in Las Vegas. Jackson, that was fantastic to have you on to talk about all these guys who were impressive and the guys who potentially struggled as well. Go and follow Jackson on Twitter at jhoynba. And go check out his work on the Stepien. Are you doing any work at the moment, or is this our time off for you at this time?
I'm conceptually starting to put together something, just looking at my top 10 mid-major prospects going into next season. I'm a huge fan of mid-major basketball, so I'm combing through those guys, just trying to figure out who I like most from that group. So I'm going to be going into that. I don't know how long it'll be. It might be a couple weeks before I have that ready. But yeah, it's a bit of a downtime right now, but that's something that I'm trying to do. But other than that, I don't really have a whole lot that I'm doing right now. And yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciated it. This was a fun discussion, getting to go deep on a lot of these guys. And, you know, it may only be summer league, but there's a lot we can learn. And especially from a fantasy perspective, it's a good first look at these guys.
Yeah, exactly. And we get to see what things are different than what we expected, what things are the same, and where the worries and concerns are. And nothing's definite at this point, but it's always good to get a good idea. And Jackson can bring that from a scouting perspective. So thank you for coming on. Go follow him over on Twitter. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Go and rate this podcast. Give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And you can also subscribe so you never miss an episode on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. And of course, on YouTube, hit that thumbs up, hit the subscribe button, and you can leave a comment. Jackson, thank you once again for coming on. All right, guys.
Thank you.
We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Donovan Mitchell.